You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for a season opening edition of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Feels so good to say those words. And it feels even better because I just got done recording today's episode with the one and only Adam Taylor of Celtics Blog. If you guys have been following me, listening to me for a while, I'm sure you've heard a podcast with Adam before. We've had a few podcasts that we've actually hosted together for other spots. And he's been a guest on this pod a bunch of times. I've been a guest on his. And it's great to get on with him and talk NBA. And specifically talk Knicks and Celtics, which we did for a while today. We got into some good stuff and talked a lot about his team and where he thinks they are and where his mindset is going into the season. And then we bounced around the NBA a little bit because, man, are those streets wild out there? Boy, whew, I mean, Simmons and Philly and getting Marvin Bagley tweets from his agent and who the hell knows what else will have dropped by the time this episode comes out, which I'm actually recording this intro right before the opening night games are about to tip off. So I have not yet watched Nets, Bucks or Lakers, Warriors, but hopefully those will be good games. And most importantly, hopefully the Knicks have a good game tonight because, man, as I talk about on this podcast, I would really love to get this season started off with a W. I think that's it. Don't forget, as always, if you are new to the KFS family, be sure to check out my live reaction to the first game of the Knicks season. You can hop on the Knicks Film School YouTube channel where I will go live immediately after the final buzzer and check that out. And of course, keep an eye on your podcast stream because our post-game live streams will be coming up on there as well. So all that is good stuff that's in store. But in the meantime, here is my conversation with the one and only Adam Taylor. Joining me now on the Knicks Film School podcast. I've only podcasted with this person. It's got to be up in the, 30s, 40s at this point? How many total times we've been on the podcast together?
I'd go higher than that.
Really? You think we're over? We might be over. You're second only to Jeremy Cohen at this point. And for some reason, he keeps coming back for more, as do you. For reasons that I don't know what they are. You can hear and read him on Celtics Blog. And also my new partner in crime at Odds Checker for all your gambling needs.
We're just Adam, encouraging good habits, man.
Great habits. Adam Taylor. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. Thank you for having me back. You keep saying that you don't know why we're coming back. Me personally, I don't know why you keep asking me back, but I'm happy.
I told
to
you,
be
it's,
here.
Your, it's the accent. It's just the accent.
Oh man! Oh, thank you. I feel really valued at this point.
I mean, you have some modicum of basketball knowledge as well.
Some modicum.
Some modicum. Listen, all I can think about right now is, so we're recording this at 5:45-ish on Tuesday. So both of our teams, so again, Adam covers the Celtics. Both of our teams are tipping off in, I guess, about 26 hours from right now, given give or take some pregame festivities. And I'm a little bit happier than I was about an hour ago because Tim Bontemps tweeted out that Jaylen Brown is questionable. I was figuring Jaylen Brown was going to play. Listen, man, I'm just going to come out right and say it. I don't think I've said this on a podcast. I've texted some people this. I'm nervous about the game because, and I don't know, I'm curious to get your take on like where your mentality is as someone who supports the Celtics going into this season. But like, so we have you guys and then we have a home and home against Orlando, who is supposed to be the whatever the second or third worst team in the league. I see this going one of two ways. Either we beat the Celtics, and then even if you split against Orlando, it's like, all right, they're 2-1. They beat the better team. They dropped one that they weren't supposed to, whatever. Well, that's fine. Or they lose the opener against the Celtics and then drop one of two against the Magic. And then it's like, oh, fuck, here it comes. not good things. So that's where my head's at. Where's your head at?
So my head's at, so the way I've kind of approached this is the Knicks are a team that have all of a sudden came from obscurity into being a potential thorn in the side of the Celtics in terms of like a team that, you know, you never really had to worry about in the mid to high echelon of the Eastern Conference seedings. It was always they'd be battling for the eighth seed. If you need to battle for the fifth, fourth, or third, you were going to be
being okay. Generous. When were we? We were not battling for the eighth
seed. I'm on a Knicks podcast, man. I'm not going to infuriate thousands of people just because.
This is good. This is why I have you on again and again, because you're much nicer than you have any right to be.
Now, all of a sudden, like the Knicks are, you know, they're a problem, or they're a perceived problem. Now, obviously, from my standpoint, I don't have the wishfulness and the belief that everything you saw last year is highly repeatable this year with a new point guard, a new shooting guard. I think that you guys are going to be a much tougher team to play against this year just because of that scoring ability. But for me, again, like I want to see that over the first 20 games before I'm like, damn, the Knicks are really actually back. Tibbs has done a great job all around. It wasn't just a one-year type of thing. And then I'm going to be scared. So this game, for me, I'm more interested in seeing how you guys utilize Kemba and Fournier differently to how Boston did. And then I'm interested in seeing whether the Celtics can actually win. That's secondary to me because it's the opening game. So, you know, you take the first night with a pinch of salt.
So, again, 82 games, a lot of games, right? You mm-hmm. should take the first night with a pinch of salt. God knows, you know, the Magic. Speaking of those Magic, they started out like 4-1 or 5-1 last year. I think the Cavs started out 3-0 and had like the best net rating in the sport for a hot minute there. That was
50% of their wins, man.
Roughly. All right. I didn't do the exact math. You know what? The funny thing is, we just said the same thing. And here's why. You just said you want to see now, okay, the Knicks were, you put it more politely than I will, the Knicks were terrible for most of the last 20 years. They had a very good season. You want to see how they do now in the next year of the Tibbs era, right? But you want to see it. I'm sitting here. I was selling orange and blue Kool-Aid. I'm all about the Kool-Aid. I chug it. The more you give me, the more I'll drink. And yes, I have the same doubts because I want to see it again, because here I am worried like, oh shit, you know, and we talked about this all last season. Like, when is the other shoe going to drop? When's the other shoe going to drop? And finally, the other shoe didn't drop, made it to the playoffs. And then the other shoe kind of dropped. But now it's like, you know, just especially because we have this early part of the schedule that is, I don't want to say easy, but it's manageable, right? They have two games against Milwaukee, two games against Philly, who we'll probably get to them at some point, mutual division rival. But every other game is a game that they should be able to win. And I feel really strongly they need to get off to that solid start. And it's these damn two Orlando games that come right after. Because it's like, again, if you're a Knicks fan, you've been watching this team for a long time, you're like, it would be just like them to drop one of those games. Hopefully they don't, but We'll see.
I mean, looking at Orlando in preseason, Cole Anthony looks really good. Bamba was playing really well. Boston played them twice. Both games you saw Mo Bamba play, so I saw at least two or three people on social media like, this is the best I've ever seen him play.
So you were impressed by Orlando. Interesting.
No, I don't think they're good by any stretch. I think they're capable of beating people, more than capable. I think they've got some really good high upside young guys. I'm a huge Cole Anthony guy though. I just think
I'm a big Suggs guy.
See, yeah, there we go. Suggs looks like he's got some good defensive timing with him already at this level. Yeah. So if they did beat you, I wouldn't be shocked. But that's not because I think the Knicks are bad. It's just because I think Orlando have it in them to put out a couple of those results throughout the season.
Well, I would very much like to go into both of those, those Orlando games with a win, but another, how do I get Andrew not to yell at me? I will not reveal where I had the Celtics in our preseason predictions podcast, which you could hear, of course, on the Knicks Film School Patreon. But I will just say, Andrew, can I just say I was very high on the Celtics? Not our preseason predictions. I was high on in the predictions podcast. I was also high on them in the wins draft.
Here is what I will do. Can, because Adam is a friend of the pod, and you can say where you had the Celtics in your rankings.
Okay,
your preseason predictions.
I had them fourth in the East, and I took them. I will just say I took them very high in our wins draft, in which we were trying to draft, you know, teams that would win the most games this season.
I feel like I'm a good influence on you.
Well, but here's the, you know, I looked at it today, and I'm sure you know this, but you know, they had, and look, we did a whole episode about Kemba when they signed him. So we don't have to spend too much time on Kemba or Fournier for that matter. But I know that situation wasn't perfect in a lot of different ways. And I'm sure the Celtics are happy to be moving on and the Knicks are happy to have Kemba and Evan. But the fact is, like, you guys only had Tatum, Brown, Smart, and Walker in the lineup together for 17 games last season, which is essentially less than a quarter of the season, which is like not like there was no consistency there. So, well, I think there are some Knicks fans who say, like, how dare you put the Celtics in the same sentence as us? They were a 7 seed last year. They just have a new coach, the whole thing. Like I'm more like you guys had a pretty rough year last year. Is the mentality for you at this point just like, I can't wait to start a new season. Like it can't go that bad again. Like let's see what the talent could do, or where are you guys at?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it can't go like that again because I'm a Celtics guy and I've seen how injuries decimate this roster from time to time. I definitely think for me, it's like they're more equipped to deal with anything like that moving forwards. Like last year, one of the biggest downfalls to the roster was there was a bunch of inexperienced guys on the bench that were playing like 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th man roles on the team and getting big minutes when guys were injured. So you'd see like Grant Williams got played in out of position or against poor matchups, got smoked. You know, Robert Williams would come in, have a really good stretch as a starter, then would end up getting turf toe and missing the end of the year. Now, there was just not enough backup. And now you look at the guys they've brought in. Nobody's a world beater. I don't think like, you know, maybe I think Dennis Schroeder with an argument for sixth man of the year could be a logical and realistic outcome at the end of the season. But none of these guys that have come in are borderline all-stars, but what they are is experienced vets. So when those injuries inevitably do happen because, you know, every team deals with its own injury crisis at one point or another. There's somebody with a bit of experience that can come in and actually maintain a very specific level where a decent baseline rather than having to rely on the inconsistency of a young guy. And I think that's where my because I have them finishing fourth as well. And I think that's where my mindset comes from, the fact that they can handle the rigors of the NBA season much better in terms of depth than what they have been able to previously. I mean, up until 2 days ago, their 15th man was Jabari Parker. There's teams out there that would love Jabari Parker as their 15th man.
I mean, he could still score, you know.
Yeah, but, like, you know, he needs...
So can Kevin Knox, I guess, in fairness. That would have been a great trade. Jabari Parker for Kevin Knox.
Kevin Knox. Never was.
Man,
I feel bad on him at one point as well.
It's, listen, you and me both. I'm not sure it's happening for him here though. Why are we talking about Kevin Knox? Talk about the 15th guy on the roster. Do you like Udoka as a coach so far?
Yeah, I mean, very minimal. He's definitely a different type of coach to Stevens. You know, he's already suspended Marcus Smart for a game, which was interesting. He's yanking.
I forget what happened there. I remember.
Smart missed the flight to the Orlando game.
Missed the flight. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So Udoka was like, "No, you're not playing in Miami." You know, Grant Williams, Udoka's like, "I really don't like it when players complain to the refs. It, you know, puts you on the back foot. You have to try and catch up to the pace of the play." And Grant Williams complained to the ref one too many times, yanked him. You didn't really see that with Stevens. Udoka seems a little bit more like, this is, you're going to play the game the way I want it played, or you're not going to play it at all. Very Spurs influenced offense. They run a lot of motion offense that you'd see Pop use back in the olden Spurs days, inspired by Budenholzer as well. So very Tatum, much more fluid.
Do Tatum and Brown, does that jive with? Because I here's the thing, I'm super high on Tatum. I still don't. I'm sure you have some opinions on this. I'd like to hear them. I still don't know what a maximized version of him looks like on offense. Like, is he just like a slightly smaller, like Kevin Durant? Like what in your world where like Tatum is maybe wins an MVP someday, or is like, is in the running for an MVP, which he almost was a few years ago. Like, what does he look like? What does his game look like?
Do you know, if you'd asked me this in the summer, I probably would have gone along with that, like a Kevin Durant-esque type of scorer. This year, so far, what we've seen from Tatum, and it's only the preseason, it's not like there's a huge sample size to lean on, but he's far more aggressive getting to the rim. He's really working.
That's always been an issue, though, for him, right?
Yeah.
Getting to the line and okay.
And now he's working like, you see him coming off a bunch of like wedge screens, and he'll curl off pick and rolls and like duck into the post. He really wants to post up on guys and get that fadeaway working as well. So maybe a better playmaking, taller Kobe type of scorer, because he seems to be that's
his idol.
It's his idol. If you look at the shot profile that he's taking in the preseason when he did play, very Kobe type of shots, you know, the turnaround fadeaway, drive to the rim, try, you know, really extend himself to get those finishes and then take the freeze as well. But I think that his scoring profile is a bit more diverse. I genuinely don't know who I'd liken him to in terms of how he's developing now and where he could end up in terms of scoring ability on all three levels. I think Durant has to be the guy that you'd liken him to. I just, obviously the size isn't there, and I don't know if he's going to be as transcendent as Durant is.
Look, Durant's one of the five greatest scorers ever. I don't know. He's
up there, dude.
Yeah. He's in the conversation as far as I'm concerned. I know that's not a popular thing to say in a Knicks podcast, but I mean,
I was just thinking the exact same thing.
It's Kevin fucking Durant. What do you want me to say? I mean, I'm like I said, and you know this, I'm very high on Tatum.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Knicks basketball is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet for Knicks tickets anymore, because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that all other sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all their NBA tickets. Don't believe it? If you could find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. When the Knicks schedule came out, there are definitely certain dates we all circled on the calendar. October 20th against the Celtics, Christmas Day against the Hawks, January 12th against the Mavericks, even April 6th against Brooklyn. Whether on the road or in the garden, TickPick has you covered. Visit TickPick.com/filmschool today to save $10 on your first order of Knicks tickets. That's TickPick.com/filmschool to save $10 on your first order of Knicks tickets today.
Brown, you know, it's funny. So I have something for the newsletter for Wednesday, in which I'll spoil my own newsletter. I am, one of my little predictions that I'm making for this year is that RJ Barrett will, we just saw a bunch of rookie contract extensions. I think RJ Barrett's going to get the max. That is not to say that he is necessarily akin to the other rookies that have gotten the max extension over the last 3 years. He's not, he's a step down from those guys, but I also think he's a step slightly above, or should be after this year, some of the guys that have gotten just below the max. And there's one guy out there who has come closest to the max without actually getting the max, and that's Mr. Jaylen Brown. And I was looking, his year three stats are eerily similar to RJ's year two stats. There's RJ a little bit more by way of assists, a little bit more by way of made threes. But Brown, the big thing he had was he was 52 effective field goal percentage as a third year player, which was down from year two when he was 54. RJ made a big jump, but he's still just below 50%. So it's the efficiency. And I think Brown has always been pretty good around the rim, right? That's been a strength.
Yeah, crazy explosive. Yeah,
exactly. That's not RJ. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the development of Brown, it's not maybe as important to the heights that Tatum reaches, but what do you, I hope he doesn't play because I want to win this fucking game, but like putting that aside, what do you expect from, or what are you looking from Jaylen Brown this season?
Do you know, Jaylen Brown's probably the only player since I've been not been a fan, but been paying ridiculously close attention to the league. You know, the way it is once you go from being a fan to writing and to, you know, that jump in attention level. He's the only player that I've followed closely where his development has been perfectly linear. There's never
really
been if you ask any Celtics fan, it's been, I remember coming off the first season, we were like, we want to see Brown develop a jump shot because he was very raw and he was just very much a slasher. Then the third year, it was Jaylen Brown's only right-handed. You know, you force him left and everything's going to go to shit. Comes back that year, his left hand's completely revamped. He's scoring left-handed and everything. Fourth year, it was that catch and shoot jumper from the corners and from the mid-range. Yeah. Every year, whatever has been a perceived weakness, he's resolved it in the off-season, and it's always led to like this linear development. This year, it was just to tighten up that handle, maybe be able to take guys off the dribble rather than just attack a closeout. Sure. Be able to actually put the ball on the floor, beat your man off the dribble, and then use that athleticism to create for others or yourself. So if he can do that this year, as well as keeping, you know, like a 35 to 38% three-point jumper and, you know, really kill it from mid-range because he does work quite well when he does attack those closeouts, I think that's perfect for Jaylen Brown. Everybody needs a Scottie Pippen, right? So
no, but that, it's funny you say that, because again, it's only been 2 years, but I wouldn't be shocked if that's how RJ goes as well, where it's just slow and steady progress, with the difference being, like you said, Brown has that, I mean, his athleticism is ridiculous. RJ's not, that's not ever going to be in RJ's bag, but the 3-point shot, I think that is something that I'm personally really excited about with Barrett. And I think, you know, look, Brown's going to be a day one or an extended, when he can extend in a year, right? I think.
I'm not sure.
If he wants to.
I'm sure. So This is the... When is this the first year of Tate? Do you know what? I haven't spoke contracts in so long. My head's gone.
You know, because Brown, we'll work this out live on the pod. This is so exceptional.
Brown got the extension folks. 1 year before Tatum. Tatum signed his extension the start of last season, which means this is the first year of Tatum's extension. So this will be the second year of Brown's extension.
But it's only Brown only has two more years left on this extension, which is interesting because it's only 4 years. Yeah. That's interesting because he. And there's probably some very basic CBA thing I'm missing, but like Brogdon just added, he tacked on two more years onto his existing 2 years. So theoretically, well, but I guess Brown's probably not thinking along those lines yet because it probably takes away, you know what the difference is? This is what the difference is. It'll decrease his earning capacity because
I think that with his development as well, you know, he's an all-star now. He's made his first all-star appearance. I think he's more than capable of making multiple more.
I think he's going to make a few. I think he's that good.
He's looking at max money. He wants near max level money. And I think he's capable as well.
Near max. He should get, if you're an all-star wing in your, what is he, 23, 24?
Yeah, he's a defensive piece as well. On-ball defense is one of his specialties when he's locked in because he can be the opposite and be a bit of a turnstile.
Really?
Sometimes, like you see the occasional play, he was quite poor defensively during his rookie year. Improved in his second a little bit. His third year, he was really, really good, and he's hovered around there. But then he'll have games where he just he really struggles sometimes to just understand switching schemes. Gets caught up on screens, doesn't navigate under or over right.
So
it just depends how locked in he is and how like what type of wave he's riding at that moment.
I'll be interested to see because I agree with you. I think he's taking steps up every year from as I can see it from afar. And then the rest of the team, you know, like I don't know. I don't think outside of Robert Williams, and I don't even think there's not a lot of mystery with these guys. And I was going to say maybe outside of Robert Williams, but even Rob Williams, we know what Rob Williams is. It just hasn't been able to stay on the floor. Like we know what he is. We know what Marcus Smart is. We know what Dennis Schroeder is. Sadly, we kind of know what Josh Richardson is at this point. But like, you know, like you said, Horford, I still think Al Horford could be a really good NBA player. Like they have all these quality pieces. And I do think you're just kind of counting on last season being something of an anomaly, right? Because of the injuries, because of COVID and everything else. And then,
but that's the complete opposite to you guys, right? Because the last thing you want is for last season to be an anomaly.
I'm not breaking any news here because I've been podcasting about this for weeks. I think they're for real. I think the offense is for real. I think the defense is for real, but where my nerves exist is because unless you employ one of the, I don't know how many names there are on this list, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys who, if you have that guy and you have a relatively healthy, competent roster around that guy, you're going to win in the high 40s, right? Over an 82 game season, at the very least. Tatum is, I don't think he's quite there yet. I think he might be in that conversation
in
a month he may be in that conversation. I don't know. I'm never gonna shy away from the guys that I like, and I like Jason Tatum. I you've known this for years. I've been talking about for you. You know, the Knicks again, Julius Randle is not in that category yet. He's awesome and we're damn happy to have him. He's not in that category yet. So because we don't have that guy, we're in that kind of juicy middle of the NBA where, you know, you could have a good season or you could have a not so good season. Like the Celtics last year were in that kind of juicy middle and they ended up going 36-36, you know? So it's not, you know, Miami, whatever. I don't know what their final record was. It was not that much worse than the Knicks. Like good teams have seasons every now and then where they're just not as good as, so it's not like I doubt what the Knicks should be or could be or are. I just, it's like, I've been watching the NBA a long time. Like you have, like some shit goes sideways sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, again, I bring it back to my nerves of like, I want to win this game. I want to get off to a good start and we'll go from there. Hold on, I'm going to throw something live at you that I literally Fred Katz, who wonderful.
He's now the New York Knicks beat writer. Yes,
for The Athletic. Wonderful, wonderful beat writer for The Athletic.
you look happy about this.
Well, because of a tweet that was going around this morning, which I won't get into. Kemba Walker on why it didn't work out in Boston. I don't know if that's a question for me, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it had anything to do with my basketball skills. I think it was more my health. But yeah, I don't know if it's really a question for me. Again, if you want to hear Adam go in depth on Kemba, go listen to the podcast that we did about 3 or 4 months ago. You gave a bunch of great stuff. We don't have to talk about Kemba for long. I guess, I don't know. I'm with a few more months of retrospect. Because again, I've spent a lot of time looking at his numbers. His numbers were not bad last year on offense. The defense, I think we're starting to get a sense of like, he struggles on that. We don't have to talk about that. But do you still think it's the fact that it was the inconsistency of just the fact that he was in and out of the lineup? Do you think it went deeper than that? Or like, again, with a lot of months to think about this, where's your final stance on the Kemba in Boston experience?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like his relationship with his teammates, like they all spoke glowingly of him all the way through his time there. Everyone was like, you know, he's a consummate professional, an ideal teammate, you know, very, very forthcoming about his own porn games, very honest and open, and then held people accountable. So I genuinely don't believe that his position on that team was soured in any way by relationships with the playing staff. I've read discussions about maybe there was a little bit of tension between Brad Stevens and Kemba Walker. I've read that there was a piece that came out not long after Kemba got traded and by Jared Weiss, one of the Celtics covers, who covers for The Athletic.
Sure.
He's fantastic. And that was one of the, one angle was like, hey, maybe, you know, Kemba felt that Brad Stevens sometimes came down a little hard on him compared to how he would on Tatum. Or
I remember. That was that in-depth. Yeah, I remember that. Okay.
So there was that side of things. But for me personally, obviously I'm not privy to what goes on in the locker room or anything like that. So for me, it was very much a, you're not healthy consistently. You're in and out of this rotation with a bunch of other guys that are in and out of the rotation because
wasn't just him. Wasn't just him.
And there was no continuity overall. Now, I do think that on the contract Kemba Walker was on with the money he was earning and the concerns about the longevity of those knees, it made sense for Boston to move on from him. They also needed to add some additional height. So I think that Kemba's fit on the roster was probably questionable, especially on the salary he was earning. Plus the lack of health overall for the entire roster kind of expedited Kemba's exit from the Celtics.
Yes. Well, look, I think let me first respond to this and then I'm going to, again, exceptional podcasting folks. I have to read this. Check Woj, what Woj just tweeted. I think the Knicks are very happy to have Kemba. I think he's going to, what I'm hoping for is that a little bit of like less is more in that he, even though he's always been obviously the highest usage guy on every team he's ever been on, with the exception of last year. And he was, I think, neck and neck with Tatum the year before that. I'm hoping he is able to, I think he'll embrace I don't say lesser role, but like, you know, not being the guy. But I wonder how easy that'll be for him to adjust to it. And I wonder if last season's experience will make it a little bit easier for Kemba to adjust a little bit to, you know, maybe deferring a little bit more to maybe being more of a pass first point guard. Is that in his wheelhouse? Does he want to do that? Is that where he's most comfortable? That's what, like, there are fit issues. I don't say there's fit issues, but it's not like you just insert Kemba Walker into this offense and everything's going to be perfect. Like, it's going to take a little bit of work on the next part to figure out these pieces. Cause just adding more talent doesn't always equate to, well, we're going to make it a better basketball team, but I'm hopeful. And I think he's got the right attitude. And I think everybody on the team is the right attitude. I think Tibbs is the right. I think everybody's on, you know, that part of it I like. So.
See, for me, it was like Kemba Walker was very vocal on playing an off ball role when the Celtics first acquired him. And I never,
in terms really of he would it. Be okay with it.
Yeah, like he wanted it. He was like, it's a way to prolong my career. It's a way to give me new avenues to be an offensive weapon and to help my teammates improve rather than just being the guy to carry the offensive load.
Sure, yeah.
Even when healthy, we never really saw that. Kemba Walker was still a very ball dominant person on the member of the rotation. What? However, that's not him. You know, that's Brad Stevens. If you don't want the ball in Kemba Walker's hands, it's your responsibility to take the ball out of Kemba Walker's hands and push that off ball duties a little bit. I had questions about the same thing with Julius Randle. I thought Randle done a fantastic job as a facilitator last year for you guys. Like a lot of the offense ran through him. How does that affect him if Kemba now needs the ball to be an effective piece?
I think... I don't worry about, so Randall, listen, Julius has been, even with the ball in his hands a lot, I think by and large, he has been incredibly unselfish in terms of like, if there is someone on the court with him that can do something better with the ball than he can. Like I, you know, did Julius take a bad shot here or two last year? Sure. But like, name me the all-star that doesn't take a bad shot or two, you know, every couple of, or once a game or whatever it is. For me, my issue is more, I didn't really feel like he ever developed any particular level of synergy with any of his teammates. Now we've started to see little drips and drabs of that with him and RJ. Speaking of Fred Katz, he had a great snippet in his piece today about using RJ as a screener with Randle, like out on the perimeter as essentially as a pick and roll combination.
I want you to DM me this tweet as well. Actually, I want to read this tweet that made you glow so much when you said his name.
Oh, I will. I'll send it to you. I'm excited about their combination, but like, I want to see how Kemba and Julius can, hopefully, I don't know if this is a word, synergize with each other. Because if we're really boiling down what went wrong with the Celtics last year, whether it was by injuries or because the pieces just didn't fit right or whatever the case may be, Brad Stevens, put the blame wherever you want. There was a lack of synergy. I think we're all in agreement about that.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what they need to figure out. Will they figure it out? Well, we'll start finding out.
The Celtics were not synergistic, if we're just making words up.
So can we, okay. Anything else we need to talk about with this game? Because I want to hit on a couple of general NBA things with you before I let you go.
Synergistic, is it a word or not?
Who are you? Oh, a couple, you know, a couple of things. We do have to hit a couple of other things. Robert Williams got, Big Bob, Time Lord, got paid four for 50. Four, right? 52, 54, so whereabouts. Mitchell Robinson still has not gotten paid. The Knicks fans get mad when people put Williams in the same sentence as Mitch because Williams hasn't been able to stay on the court. That said,
that's fair.
It is fair. At the same time, Williams has shown some nascent playmaking ability, shall I say? Is that fair? He is certainly a defensive presence when he's out there. So
he's added a mid-range jumper to his bag now as well.
That, which is again, something we haven't seen from Mitch. So like, look, there's pluses and minuses in both of their baskets. Do you like the contract for Williams?
I was advocating for a 1+1 personally.
Really?
Or yeah, a 1+1 on a prove yourself deal. I was very much along the lines of, we'll pay you $10 million this year. We're going to have a team option on year two. And you know, we're going to incentivize you to stay healthy and earn that big deal. And then we'll sign you long term.
Ye of little faith, Adam Taylor. Shots fired at the Williams camp. We haven't
played a regular season game yet, and he's already missed two preseason games. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, for me, it was very much along the lines of, I want to see it before the Celtics tie up more money. Now, don't get me wrong, his upside as a guy that can play make, a guy, you know, if that mid-range jump shot actually develops a little bit more, that short roll offense just explodes in diversity for him.
The upside is a top 15 center. I think that's the upside. Just like Mitch. Mitch, that's maybe even higher.
I've said to you many a time, I think Mitchell Robinson's a fantastic big man.
From the first podcast we ever did, you were glowing about Mitchell Robinson. You have been consistent on that the whole time.
Yeah, I think Mitch Robinson's, his ceiling was really high. I always did say that I think that his development and the way he developed quicker than Rob Williams was because Rob Williams didn't play because he was always injured. No. Otherwise, I think those two would be closer in their developmental kind of like path. But no, I get that top 15 and, you know, top 15 centers, then they're not worth a bunch. You know, it's the top four centers where you want to pay extreme money for.
Well, I mean,
which leads us into DeAndre Ayton.
I was about to say, we don't, you know, I listened to the first bit of Zach Lowe's podcast. They were talking about him and I think it was Pelton.
Mac Lowe to Zach Lowe.
And I think Zach Lowe had a good take. Shockingly, I think Zach Lowe had a good take. which is that on the surface, like, it's not ridiculous that the Suns don't think DeAndre Ayton is a max guy, because I don't think he's a max guy either. But at the same time, it's like, if you're, you know, sometimes you got to just, I don't know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And I wonder how that situation is going to work out. But I agree with you. There are very few centers in the league that are just like, here, take all of our money.
See, my thing is, like, he might not be a max guy now, but do you think by the end of that deal, he could be max level?
No, because to me, if you're going to, an automatic max center, a guy who deserves the max, right? I'm not saying, put the category of player aside who's like, we just kind of got to give this guy the max. Like, mm-hmm. Again, no, I'm not going to say that. It'll get me in trouble. Certain players get maxes who, no. Certain players get maxes who may not be true max players, but it's like, it's the right thing for your organization. It's not going to kill you. Ayton, like, does not have the offensive game, or if, in my personal opinion, the ability to get to the offensive game of, obviously, Nikola Jokic is the greatest passing center of all time, but even, like, you know, Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns, can he get to, like, Bam Adebayo offensively? I don't know about that. Bam Adebayo is kind of like a playmaking center.
Very, very, very shifty in terms of, like, lateral quickness and ability to change pace.
To say nothing of his abilities on the defensive end and his versatility there. So then it's like, okay, well, where does Ayton slot in? Like, those are to me, when I think of max centers in the NBA, Rudy Gobert, like, put him in his own category, because I think that contract's going to age terribly, but we don't have to get into that right now. So it's like, if you're that next tier down as a center in the NBA, like, what are you, like, are you still a max guy just because you might be the sixth or seventh best center in the NBA? I don't know.
I mean, the question you got to ask yourself is, if you lose him for nothing now, or if
is he
replaceable? Like, can you replace him and maintain the level of success that you've had with him?
I think the question is, would you rather potentially lose DeAndre Ayton for nothing? Not that that's really in the cards, unless he signs the qualifying offer, which, you know, we've never seen anybody do it. It's anything's possible. I think it's, you never know. But, like, what's better, that or paying a guy $5 million more than he's worth a year, which is then gets back to my original point. Sometimes, even if a guy is not a max guy, you pay him because it is in the best interest of all parties involved. You know, even if it is an overpayment. Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. I want to hold on. Last Celtics thing. Enes Kanter, are you excited about return of Enes Kanter experience?
I'll tell everybody, man. I don't think Enes Kanter's as bad as what everybody says. I understand the defense is bad. The pick and roll defense is appalling. If you play him anywhere outside of a drop coverage, he's going to get smoked. If you play him in drop coverage, chances are he's still going to get smoked. But he can come off the bench and he can attack the boards for you on the offensive glass. He can give you second chance possessions. And after a year where I've watched Tristan Thompson battle and win offensive rebounds and make the worst decisions physically possible once acquiring those offensive rebounds, I would much rather Enes Kanter.
I've never heard anybody use the verb acquiring along with offensive rebounds. You could come across offensive rebounds in a lot of ways. Acquire them is not something I've ever heard, which is why I love you.
He garners them.
Oh, wow. That's even better.
Yeah.
He garners them. Can you, like, garnish? Like, you garnish someone's wages? That means you take them away. Well, he is garnishing them because he's taking another team's rebound away because it's an offensive rebound. So he's garnering and garnishing offensive rebounds. This is exceptional podcasting, by the way.
What's going on? I'm Andrew Claudio.
And I'm Bernard Ozarowski.
And this is our brand new movie podcast, Final Review.
Each week, we'll pick a different movie that is widely considered one of the greatest of all time.
And determine just how great it actually is using 10 different top five lists.
For example, The Dark Knight might be great, but is it even a top five Christopher Nolan film?
Or Blade Runner might be an all-timer, but is it even a top five Harrison Ford performance?
At the end, we'll add up the movie's total score.
And see once and for all where it lands on the all-time Pantheon scale.
Let us know how much you agree or disagree with our rankings.
You can follow the show on all social media platforms by searching Final Review Pod.
New episodes drop every Thursday on iTunes, Spotify, and all the other major podcast streaming sites.
Final Review, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network.
Subscribe now wherever podcasts are available.
What ones could we use? Hold on, we need to go through the vocabulary.
It has to start with the letter G, though. It has to start with the letter G.
You can pilfer rebounds.
Two general NBA things, and then we'll get out of here. I think the NBA is releasing the first bit of the top 75 list. And like, are they doing it at 6:30 today?
Are they?
Andrew, if you're still there, check on that. Okay, maybe we'll get to that. Who knows? Maybe you'll get some live reactions on the show. So this from Jeff Schwartz from Excel Sports. This is what had me momentarily distracted.
I have seen it.
You have seen it. This is the agent for Marvin Bagley. I don't know what I'm just going to read this and then I guess we'll react.
Got a response already lined up.
Sacramento has informed Marvin Bagley he is not in the opening night rotation. Which is completely baffling. It's clear that they have no plans for him in the future. And yet, passed on potential deals at last year's deadline and this summer based on, quote, value, end quote. Instead, they chose to bring him back, but not play him. A move completely contradictory to their, quote, value, end quote. Argument. This is a case study in mismanagement by the Kings organization. I don't really know what to say other than like, go Kings.
Marvin Bagley is the Kevin Knox of the West.
You know, it's funny because I was going through the extensions in the newsletter for what's today, Tuesday, and I was like
14 minutes.
we focus so much on that Knox pick, and when I say we, I mean Knicks fans, and the fact that obviously, you know, forget about Mikal Bridges, even, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Michael Porter Jr., putting aside his personal issues and politics and what have you. You know, even someone like Miles Bridges, like he didn't come to a contract extension probably because he's seeking a lot of money because he's pretty good. Nobody talks about Mo Bamba, and all due respect to you seeing Mo Bamba play pretty decent basketball in the preseason. Mo Bamba has not exactly had a stellar career thus far. And then of course the big one, I mean, is Marvin Bagley the biggest, does he have a chance to be the biggest draft bust ever, given the fact that he went one spot ahead of Luka Doncic?
I mean, that just adds the spotlight, right? Like, if Luka Doncic weren't in that draft,
then it's like whatever.
Yeah, so I think putting him as the biggest bust ever because Luka Doncic is in that draft is just a little bit harsh, but it's true. Like, you know, I think that the problem with Bagley was, for me, that he came into the league incredibly one-handed. He was dribble right or dribble, and his left hand was ridiculously shoddy, and he never ever done anything to develop his game.
Yeah.
And then he's getting into off-court rap battles with guys, and his dad's thinking he's LeVar Ball, trying to be, you know. And I,
when you're just, a downmarket LeVar Ball, it's not where you want to be.
Yeah, I mean, the upmarket LeVar Ball's not where you want to be. So downmarket LeVar Ball, yeah, you know,
LeVar Ball, sorry. Oh, things have gone off the rails.
Please don't sue us.
You know, these things fascinate me because, like, what is, like, we don't have to have a real conversation about this, but like, what is Marvin Bagley's trade value right now? Like,
Ennis Kanter and a first round pick in 2054.
Stop it.
Nah, seriously, I don't know. I think it'd still be a viable young piece, but you
like, could you get a first for it? You can't get a first for him, I don't think, right?
It'd have to be heavily protected, right?
I don't even know.
What I'm saying by that is you could get a first in kind of like in principle, but in realistic terms, it's going to convey as 2 seconds.
One of those, oh, that was the Nerlens Noel.
That type of deal.
Contract, yeah.
So, you save face because you get that first round pick, but it's so protected that it just conveys as 2 seconds.
Not contract. That was Nerlens Noel. It was trade to Dallas, I think, maybe from Philly. I think that was what it was.
Because you can say we got a first for him, but in all reality, you just got 2 seconds.
Yeah. So that's one thing. And then, of course, the story of the day, which again, I mean, wow. Adding to, I think this tweet for me, it might be up there with the Bagley tweet from Shams Charania. Ben Simmons, and this is after, for anybody who doesn't know, Doc Rivers tossed Ben Simmons out of practice today because Ben Simmons apparently did not want to engage in some kind of drill. So he told him,
defensive drill.
Get the fuck out of here. And then Joel Embiid proceeded to say that we're not being paid to babysit him. What was the thing about this man? I don't want to talk about or this man. Like, I'm done thinking about this man. I'm done worrying about this man.
Pretty much along that was just like, fuck this guy.
it was Joel Embiid's way of saying, fuck this guy. So now from The Athletic, Ben Simmons is not against playing, but he is not mentally ready yet. That's Ben Simmons inside. I don't know if you could hear him. Sources tell Shams Charania. In his first meeting with Sixers personnel last week, Simmons reiterated that he was not mentally ready to rejoin the team. That's just, I mean, we both are division rivals with the Sixers. I still fear the Sixers because I fear Joel Embiid and I respect Doc Rivers as a regular season coach. And I respect Tobias Harris. I think Tobias Harris is good. I think Seth Curry's good. I think Tyrese Maxey has a chance to be good. I don't love necessarily the rest, like everything about their roster, but like I still think regardless of what
they've
happens,
got with pieces this, around them, yeah,
they have stuff, right? Like I don't see like maybe they fall apart. I think I actually picked them pretty low in our predictions podcast just because I had to pick somebody pretty low.
So my thing is, if you're relying solely on Joel Embiid, then you better be prepared to go 15-25 games during the regular season without him there.
Yeah.
And you know, and then you might have to be prepared to do that in the playoffs too. And that's where having Ben Simmons is beneficial. Obviously, it doesn't always work out because Ben Simmons on his own just gives you nothing other than defense, really. Harsh. Yeah, it's being harsh.
I still want to see him with his... you want to talk about lowering your value. If there was a way to get like an air quotes emoji into that statement, if Jeff Schwartz were able to do that, he should have done that. That would have made it better. But I want to see Simmons with his own team around him. I don't know how good that team is going to be, but I think he'll remind folks of like he's a pretty good player.
I mean, I think that's part of his problem though, right? Like he's never been the number one option on that team, but he gets the majority of the disdain from fans when things go wrong. He's always been that scapegoat. Then he's being told the team won him back and he's a franchise cornerstone. But during last summer, not this one just gone, but the one before, they were happily putting his name in trade conversations even then. So there's been no love. I think Doc Rivers' hands aren't clean in all of this either. I think Doc Rivers handled
dirty. Dirty hands.
Dirty hands, very dirty hands. And I just think that Simmons has been portrayed as this evil villain. I think he's acted petulantly. He's been a petulant child.
He's acted like a fucking child. Yeah.
But I do think that he was put in a position where he genuinely just stopped giving a fuck.
It's bad all around. I think the Embiid Simmons combination was always
doomed.
Doomed. Yeah. You nailed it. It was doomed. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Anything else? You want to end with any like hot takes? You want to give me a prediction?
Hot take, it's going to come down to a last possession game. And I'm not choosing who wins, but I think it's going to be you know, one or two possessions win the Knicks Celtics game. I don't know who it's going to be yet.
I'd be shocked if this did not come down to the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, shocked. If this is a blowout, something has gone utterly wrong for one of the two teams.
Let me ask you this. Who is the guy on the Knicks that you want taking the last shot? Because you think he'll miss and the Celtics will win. And who is the guy you do not want to see with the ball in his hands taking the last shot?
I think I haven't seen enough of RJ Barrett to know whether he's got that clutch gene. So I'm going to choose RJ Barrett taking that last shot. Obviously, I could have gone ridiculous and said someone like, I want Mitch Robinson taking a free.
No, I mean, like of the people that are likely to. Yeah.
So RJ Barrett would be the guy I'd want taking that last shot just because I don't know if he's clutch. I haven't seen enough of him to make that assertion.
It came during a terrible season and it was a game that really didn't matter, but he had a game winner against the, oh God, I hope I don't screw this up. I think it was against the Rockets in his rookie year. That was, I think, maybe his best game of his rookie season. I don't know. I don't think that he had any game or any like big shots in like the last minute of a close game last season. And I'm sure if I've forgotten one, many Knicks fans would remind me of it, but none comes to mind immediately.
Don't you hate it though when you're talking about something and it's something that you know you should know and you know that you know, but your brain
should. If I forgot like an RJ Barrett, I know he didn't have like a game winner, but if I forgot like a massive shot that he hit in like the last minute of a close game, the Memphis game that started the streak, Andrew Claudio is telling me. So Andrew, I believe, is talking about the layup over. Andrew, just come on here. Come on. What are you doing hiding behind a screen? There was a fast break in that game that RJ converted, right? And then there was a fast break that Ja Morant did not convert, if I recall correctly.
So the way that game ended, the Knicks were down 5. And yes. RJ Barrett got fouled on a 3, hit all 3 free throws.
Okay, that's pretty
good. Then on a defensive stop, the RJ then took it coast to coast rather than Tibbs calling a timeout and made the layup to tie the game. Okay. Then the Memphis...
But it was a fast break.
I'm fine. That was a game winner. Like,
okay, but it was not a okay. Traditionally, when we have these, this is me trying to dig out of my own hole. Traditionally, when we talk about these things, we talk about like things in a half court setting. I'm just throwing that out there.
Did he do what Julius did in the last preseason game?
You know what? I regret asking Andrew to come on.
You asked, I answered.
All I'm saying is that, you know, there's times where I forget to do. You asked me about a contract earlier, and I know that I know the answer, but sometimes you're like, oh. You know, it happens.
I abdicate all responsibility. Okay, so wait, who's the guy that you don't want to see?
I think it's going to be Kemba, just because Kemba has got that clutch gene. Kemba's got a reason to nail that game winner. Now, for you, who's the guy you do want taking the last shot, and who's the guy you don't? We already know who you don't.
Well, Randall just hit one. Oh wait, no. For you guys, I don't want Tatum taking it, the obvious answer is Marcus Smart, except he fucking hit one to beat us last year, and it was really annoying. I'll give a different answer. Schroeder could take the last shot. That's fine.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Oh dear goodness. Okay, that's a signal that this podcast needs to end. Adam, anything from you before we give us something to plug, promote, whatever.
First of all, everyone listening, you have no idea how lucky you are to have Macri as a guy that covers your team.
We're going to edit this out of the podcast. We're editing this out.
No, you are. Macri is awesome. He does a great job with his newsletter. I'm a Celtics fan. I read it religiously. Does a great job with the podcast. You guys are really lucky to have him. If you want to follow me and be a little bit less lucky, but just as informed, then you can feel free to follow me at Adam Taylor NBA on any social media channel and read my work and listen to my lovely English voice over at CelticsBlog.com. Thank you very much for having me yet again.
You're lovely 25 minutes away from being 34 years old,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, God, yeah. No, it's not good. I'm close to... I'm technically looking at it... 30 to 33 is early 30s. 34 to 36 is mid 30s. 37 to 40 is late 30s.
30 was big for me, but then 35 was big because then once I crossed 35, I was officially
old,
closer to 40. Actually, I don't even think the math on that works out. But in my head, once I crossed 35, I was closer to 40 than 30, which was not, that was not a world that I wanted to live in. And now I'm almost 39, which is going to be like, holy shit, that's going to be like a death sentence for me. Because then once I hit 40,
I want to turn 40, dude.
Oh my God.
I want to live for like a million years, but turning 40 scares the life out of me, dude.
Yeah, I know.
I just feel, how can you put me in a nincompoop discussion, man?
Until the Celtics game is over, you're officially in nincompoop.
Can I be a nincompoop after you send me this tweet?
You can be a casual nincompoop. How's that?
That's worse, man. Do you know what? There's a thing. I think we should stop vilifying casual fans. They make up 80% of our readership bases. They're my co-hosts too.
So it's just, you know.
Yeah, Jeremy, there's such a long story that we'll tell you after.
We'll tell you later. Okay. all right. Adam Taylor, everybody go follow him over at Celtics Blog. He's the man. And thank you for coming on.
Anytime.
Okay. I hope you enjoyed that. Rousing discussion about the Knicks' first opponent of the season. We always have a lot of laughs, and I hope you had some laughs too on your end. That's it for this episode. Again, as always, if you enjoy what you hear here on Knicks Film School, feel free to drop us a rating, leave a review, subscribe if you're not already subscribed, and don't forget, as always, in addition to the podcast and the YouTube channel, if you would like even more Knicks coverage from yours truly, feel free to subscribe to the Knicks Film School newsletter on Substack. The easiest way to get access to that is just to go to my Twitter follow or my Twitter handle, JC Macri NBA, and you could subscribe. I'm always running deals. I'll probably wind up running a deal at some point this week or next week to give you a little bit of a break, but even a full price, $5 a month. I mean, it's a cup of coffee and you get a Knicks newsletter 5 days a week. And I like to think that they are pretty good. So feel free to check that out. And on that note, let's get a win, baby. Here we go. Let's go Knicks. Talk to you soon.